What's going on, hockey fans? This is episode 74 of the Clappercast. I'm Burke, and as always, joined by my co-host Sean. Sean, what's going on today?
We are enjoying the end of the first weekend of NHL action. It's been great to have hockey on, all these action and stuff going on, so it's just, you know, nice to get back in the groove.
Yeah, it's been a good first week, I guess, almost a week. And it's been a lot of kind of a mix. You know, there's been a few shutouts and there's been a lot of high scoring games. So I think we're kind of seeing that thing that's very usual in the season where the goalies come back and they're, you know, a little loose and defense is not so great. And, you know, the lack of any exhibition preseason games and, you know, just the real short camps, I think has really lend itself to, you know, a lot of scoring, as we've seen a lot of, you know, a lot of like 5-4, 5-0 type games so far.
8-0.
Yeah.
For the most part, I mean, usually the early season is kind of like the offense is there a bit earlier than the team systems, the defense, the goalies. But I do kind of want to mention that, like, looking at how the games are playing out and the quality of the play, even with no preseason and the short camps, that, like, it's kind of showing that maybe we don't need that lengthy of a preseason process, that, like, the 7 or 8 game preseasons can be cut down to 2 or 3 games and it's not really going to make an impact, really. Maybe in just terms of showing off, like, rookie players or trying to, like, set the roster in that regard, it might still be useful, but to get the players ready, it looks like they're mostly okay and good to go with the short camp and a couple of games, maybe just to find their legs.
Yeah, there was a comment, but I think it was like, might have been like Brendan Gallagher. Can't remember exactly who it was, but they were saying, you know, they kind of like the short camp. Everybody kind of comes ready to play, and they don't feel like they need so much extra time. And I think that was interesting because from the players' perspective, yeah, they want to get into playing meaningful games and they want, you know, points to count and to just get on with the thing. But from management or from coaching perspective, they obviously want, you know, a longer training camp. They want that preseason. They want to be able to test out their roster and to get things like chemistry and line combinations all set up. So it's kind of funny to see, you know, a player come out and say, hey, I like this. We should do this all the time.
I would fully support that if they cut it back to a couple of games. Because, like, that entire month of September into October of training camp and preseason just kind of gets a bit tiring at the end of it, just watching as a fan.
Yeah, I mean, from, like, a player's perspective, it totally makes sense. But I think for teams that are competitive, that makes sense. But maybe there's some teams where guys come and they're not ready for camp. Like, they're totally out of shape. I mean, we see that all the time. I mean, like, the rumor last year was, like, Johnny Gaudreau came and he was, like, super out of shape. And I don't know if that was true or not. But, you know, you have those kind of rumors come out all the time that, oh, this guy came to camp and he was, like, you know, 20 pounds overweight or had not been training properly. And I'm not saying this about Jake Virtanen, but I know he really hit the weights hard this off season because the Canucks told him, like, we want you to be bigger, basically. And, you know, he's come to camp before and they've said, oh, well, you didn't train like we wanted you to. And so, you know, having that extra time can allow the player to, you know, work on that a bit longer and maybe, you know, get back in with the team's trainers and strength coaches and all that sort of stuff. So there is that side of it too. And then, you know, maybe that can prevent injury, but the other side is you're playing more games, you're on the ice more, so you have an increase in potential injuries. So it's going to be interesting to see next season if they do away with such a long, extensive training camp.
Might have to for one more season just to get things back on track, because I believe this year they're going to be playing the Cup final like early to mid-July, and they still want to start like in October, early November. So they're going to probably cut back again and have a short camp to get the season started, you know, on time so that they can still play their 82 game one next year and get things back going, you know, how it was before everything happened.
Also, the extended training camp, I think, is a good opportunity for those players that aren't going to make opening day roster. You know, the guys who are at the AHL level or maybe they just got drafted, they get an opportunity to meet all of the you know, top end players and to be able to try and play with the team. And in those preseason games, you know, they kind of get a little bit of NHL action so that when the season rolls around and they get called up, you know, they've at least have some of those preseason games, and the coach gets to see, you know, kind of where everyone's at and what their skill level and what their work ethic's like and how they might fit into the system and everything. Yeah. So, you know, with the AHL kind of being kind of getting the short end of the stick this season, where, you know, some teams are opting out and not, and teams are having to combine to even have a season, you know, I think they might be hesitant to pull away from that permanently, just because, you know, there is that kind of development side of things.
That's a good point too, because a couple of years ago the Oilers drafted Ryan McLeod, and that fall when he was in his first training camp, he almost made the team. He was a second round draft pick that year, and he almost made the team out of camp because of how impressive he was through that process. Like, he was kind of, he was one of the final cuts, and he's kind of been on the cusp of getting called up for a little bit here, and he's even had his name thrown around this year. So, you know, that was a good opportunity for him to kind of show where he was at in his development and get a chance to almost make the Oilers right out of training camp, his first year as a pro.
Yeah, it's always kind of a good opportunity for guys to, you know, battle and show that they're, you know, perhaps have elevated their game or stepped it up. And, you know, even if you've seen, like, you know, guys that have been drafted in, like, the 7th, 6th or whatever rounds that have, like, an awesome training camp and then make the team. I mean, recently, like, one comes to mind is, like, Jesper Bratt for New Jersey, you know, like, I don't know, sixth round pick Jesper, I think, Bratt, is. And so he just had an amazing camp and, yeah, and, you know, made that team. And so it's, you know, if you have such a short camp, you might not get a good look at guys like that, and you might be like, oh, well, you know, how good could you really be or whatever. So I just think from, like, the longer term perspective, they'll probably want to revert back to those longer training camps. I know as a fan, it kind of sucks because you have to wait so long to actually get to meaningful games, but I know some people are really into that, you know, that roster pipeline and, or the prospect pipeline and seeing how everyone stacks up and all that. And I know that's kind of the part of my knowledge that's the weakest is the prospect gang. So I'm not super into that. So I would be into the shorter camps and all of that as a fan. Anything else that's like kind of jumped out at you so far with these early games? Any of these early matchups that have really piqued your interest at all, Sean?
We kind of trashed New Jersey in our preview episode for that division, just saying, like, you know, what chance do they have? Like, they're pretty much just, you know, done from the start. But they opened the season with two games against the Boston Bruins, and they actually held their own. I believe what they go 1-1.
Yeah,
1-0 in time, and won the other game against the Boston Bruins, and
forced them to OT.
Yeah, so, you know, yeah, it's two games. Small sample size, but for them to kind of be able to start the season and be able to do that against one of the league's best teams is damn impressive. And additionally, within that, in those two games, the Devils did not give up an even strength goal. They only got scored on shorthanded and on the power play.
Wow. Yeah, I saw that shorthanded one. It was on at the gym when I was there, and it was Marchand just making a really good play, battling through. I think it was a forward playing defense and just battled through, kind of blowed by him on the line and passed it over to Bergeron. And how deadly are those guys shorthanded, right? Like, it's just insane.
Imagine,
so it's understandable.
Imagine being able to ice that, like icing your two best players, your two best offensive players shorthanded as they're also your best penalty killers. Like, that's such a great opportunity.
It's interesting that you say that, because Toronto tried that in their opener against Montreal, and they put Matthews out on the penalty kill, and he was on the same side of the ice as Shea Weber, and Shea Weber got a slap shot off, and Matthews really didn't look like he was trying very hard to get in the way.
I don't blame him.
And Yeah, me neither. And I know the Sportsnet panel was talking about, you know, do you really want your premier player out there? Because if he takes that off the leg and, you know, gets like a broken leg or something, that's like a huge loss to the team. But on the other side, you know, he could have got in Weber's grill and poked it by him and then could have had a breakaway or something. And yeah, it kind of made me think that, you know, Boston has their number one line out there on the PK, and they're super valuable for that. But funny that the Leafs are trying to do that too. But from Montreal's perspective, it's funny because, you know, Weber will know that Matthews isn't really going to try to block it. So he's got basically a free shot lane, right?
So basically Matthews' responsibility in that is to get out of the way so the goalie can actually see the puck and then, like, you know, position himself right to make the save. So the last thing he wants to do is go and be, like, half in the shooting lane and, like, blocking whoever's in net's vision, screening his own goalie and letting a Shea Weber slap shot through.
Yeah, not ideal.
So you mentioned the Leafs were trying their, you know, premier players out on the penalty kill. Edmonton tried that too over the last couple of seasons, having Draisaitl and McDavid killing penalties. Doesn't always work the greatest. You know, it's great if you want like a quick shorthanded breakaway the other way, but doesn't always work the greatest. And they still try to put McDavid and or Draisaitl out on the ice at the end of the penalty. They try and capitalize on the quick break the other way when the guy jumps out of the box. So they'll still usually have one of them out at the end of the penalty kill.
Yeah, I've noticed that watching Oilers games too, actually, that they'll always throw them out there if there's a draw at the end of the penalty, just to try and, quickly break out and sprint down the ice. I don't know how effective it is, but I think, using those guys at the end of the penalty kill are smart. And I think it was Kevin Bieksa on the panel was even saying that exact thing, you know, if you don't want to use your star players on the penalty kill, but you also want to get them in the game, how about you put them out at the end?
Exactly.
And so, you know, they're not really killing the penalty, but they're out there and they're on the ice. And so they're getting some touches and, you know, they're getting a feel of the game, because if they're just sitting there all, like, if you could take penalty after penalty after penalty, it can be rough to not have them, you know, with their ice time going up. But I know as a Capitals fan, I wouldn't want to see Ovi out there for a penalty kill too many times. Unless it was
be really good at covering
at the very end of the game and there was an empty net. Yeah.
It's like, hey, this is my wheelhouse. I know exactly what to do.
Yeah. Yeah, true. But yeah, I mean, I think there's got to be a few other teams in the league that put their stars out there for a PK. But I mean, it probably depends on, you know, how defensively responsible those star players are. Because you think of, like, St. Louis, like Ryan O'Reilly is definitely out there for a PK, but he's not quite the same type of player as, you know, McDavid or Matthews. So makes a bit more sense for him to be out there. And, you know, Marchand and Bergeron, specifically Bergeron, makes a lot of sense for him to be out there. One thing that I wanted to mention is that I think the NHL has done a really good job so far. The schedule is, you know, really compact, but I think that the baseball style mini series, for lack of a better term, is actually working out really well. And I'm always finding myself, if there's a particularly close game or, you know, like a call that was kind of divisive in one of the games, or, you know, a cheap shot or something, I'm really looking forward to the second game and be like, oh, you know, what's going to happen next? Because, you know, that was a close game and, you know, could have went either way. And then the second game I find that the second games have always been very exciting. Do you have any thoughts on that, Sean?
Yeah, no, I fully agree. We've heard a couple of players talk about this, how it's going to be a bit, you know, in air quotes here, easier for them because they have a bit less travel, especially in the North Division that you're going cross country. So I think from the player's perspective, it works well because you can get more games in with less plane trips. Like, you're going to a city, you're going to be there for 2 or 3 days playing a couple of games and then going somewhere else for a couple more days and then going some days and games. So it's nice. And no, I fully agree with you on the fan as well. As a fan, getting to watch like a couple of games, because it's like that's when you build the intensity, the emotion, the momentum between the two teams, is when you play them a couple of times, you know, back to back in close sequence to each other. You know, we always looked forward to like the weekend home and homes with the battle. You know, those were like, those are the most intense weekends of that, you know, that rivalry, because you play them two times really close to each other. And it's like the storyline of the weekend. So now you get that every single series with another team, you get that same little like rivalry matchup. And we saw today, Detroit and Columbus earlier today, they had their game, and right at the end, I think it was like the last minute of the game, there was a play where Bobby Ryan got Corpus Allo and it started a brawl. You know, Werenski and Larkin fought, and Bjorkstrand and someone else fought, and the Red Wings as well. And they're going to play again probably tomorrow or the next day. You know, they're ending on that high note of that line brawl, so it's going to be exciting to kind of see how that transitions into game two here.
Yeah, it was super exciting. You know, who thought that those teams had it out for each other? And then there was Buffalo versus Washington. In game one, Nick Dowd laid a questionable hit on Staal. And then, you know, game two, I was looking forward to be like, okay, well, you know, is he going to have to answer for this? You know, I don't think anything really ended up happening, but you could see that, you know, Dowd was getting targeted by guys like Rasmus Ristolainen all game. And so it's that kind of mini excitement for like a playoff series. And it's very fun to watch as a fan. And, you know, you don't have to force rivalries. Like, you don't have to always have Wednesday night rivalry, right? It can be just, you know, Detroit and Columbus, and it, you know, it just, it's hockey, and it makes itself apparent. You know, like that game was pretty quiet and pretty tame, and then, you know, just push the goalie basically at the very end of the game trying to get a goal, and, you know, all hell broke loose, and it's fun to watch. And, you know, Larkin and Werenski used to be roommates, and they ended up fighting, and I think Larkin left some tickets for Werenski's parents to pick up at the game. That. And you know, you could see them almost laughing when they were fighting, and you know, it's just exciting. I really like this schedule, and you know, the NHL has had, I think, 27, it might be a little bit more, but from the last news article I read, it's 27 positive cases, and 17 of those were on the Dallas Stars. And you know, that seems like a lot, especially for the Stars to have that many players testing positive. But you know, cumulatively during camp, I mean, how many players are there? There's,
it was like 30 something, 35 per team or something, not to mention coaches, trainers.
Yeah, there's all sorts of staff around, and you know, all the guys in the taxi squad, and all the guys who got waived and all that. So there's a lot of people involved, and you know, that's not that high of a number. And you know, I think the NHL's seems like they have a lot of good protocols in place, and you know, like JT Miller and Jordy Benn. You know, Jordy Benn, I think, tested positive, and JT Miller had, you know, close contact with him, and so he was on the COVID protocol list and missed the first few games. And so, yeah, I think they're just doing a good job at it, and, you know, I think they should be given some kudos for that, because Gary Bettman came out and said that they're operating at a loss, and, you know, they're not losing millions, they're losing billions, and it's not about the money, it's about the game. And you know, it's, I really commend them on doing a really good job, and, you know, they are providing really entertainment for people, and it's,
yeah,
I just really, really like what they're doing.
I think a big-ish factor into why they still had to continue playing is to do with all the contracts they have and the obligations they have, especially from their perspective, the TV contract. That's, you know, they're up for renewal right away, and this is going to be like one of the most pivotal moments in the history of the league to see how much they can get on which networks and like how much exposure they can get out of it. And for them to cancel an entire season right in the lead up to that would probably, you know, cost them more in the long run than the operating losses of this season. So I think, you know, kind of making it look like a do good thing for the fans, but there's, you know, there's probably more obligations and long-term losses to consider when they're factoring that in. However, you are totally right in saying that, you know, it's you know, they're doing it for the game, not the money, which is kind of putting, you know, putting the game, putting the sport, putting the fans, the players, like all of their well-being, and putting that all ahead of, you know, the bottom line, which is kind of still a nice thing that we're, you know, getting. We're getting hockey, we're getting a season, we're getting something to kind of help keep us distracted and, you know, give us something to look forward to in a very difficult global situation, right?
Yeah, and, you know, there's definitely the contracts and, you know, ads and all that sort of stuff that makes up, you know, a lot of the revenue for the league and the owners, but the ticket sales are massive for them, and they're so reduced right now that, you know, there's teams that barely break even from the sounds of things, like Florida at the best of times, and right now, you know, the fan capacity is at zero or significantly reduced, and so you know, they are losing money undoubtedly, but you're totally right that the TV contract is something that's gonna, you know, it could be huge to change the amount of money that's involved in hockey compared to the other, you know, of the big sports in North America. But, you know, they could have canceled it all and just said, you know, we're going to save money.
Exactly.
And then come back next season. And so, yeah, it's obviously a bit of both. I'm happy as a fan. You know, I don't live in a city where there is a team, and so I'm not too bummed out. I can't go watch one in person. But it's nice to have it back and kind of have a little bit of a sense of normalcy, even though we're still, you know, obviously dealing with COVID throughout all this. It's been, honestly, it's been really good for my mental health because it gives me something to kind of, you know, think about rather than work.
Yeah, it does. I mean,
it's always nice to have hockey back.
It's something to look forward to at the end of the day. It's something to look forward to on a day off when, you know, like today there's games all day. So we're going to finish up recording here and I'll be able to switch on a game immediately and then be able to watch the rest of the night. It's, you know, we can focus on side stuff like fantasy hockey and kind of get a little bit into that. And it's just nice to have the distraction, the positive interactions with people and stuff like that to keep things, you know, like you said, the normalcy, the distractions, all that type of stuff.
So the Flyers came in. They're the team that I'm kind of picking to go all the way this season. I think they're really built strong. And so in game one, they came out against their rival, Pittsburgh Penguins. And it was actually a really, really good game for Philly. It's a really cool storyline to have both Oscar Lindblom and Nolan Patrick return. And, you know, the icing on the cake was that they both scored.
Yeah, that's really amazing.
It's a very cool, moment. Yeah, to have both those guys come back into the lineup. You know, Lindblom returned to the bubble in playoffs, but, you know, making his regular season return, and Patrick sat out all of last season. And to just come back and to get those.
Yeah, it's such a big emotional boost for the team to get both of them back at the same time into the lineup like that, to get both of them scoring and productive offensively immediately. It's like a really good like momentum boost for the team in a first game, and they end up doing great. They beat Pittsburgh 6-3 in the first game, 5-2 in the second game. That's a really good showing for the start of the season, and they're really exemplifying why they have such strong depth, especially on forward. They lost Sean Couturier very early on in that second game, but they seem to be able to, you know, fill the hole that was left by him, and he's going to be out for a couple weeks, but they still have a lot of really good forwards, so I don't see them struggling too much in his absence.
Yeah, Travis Konecny got a hat trick in that second game, or was... Yeah, in that second game, I think. Also got an assist in that game as well. And so, yeah, they're really strong up front. Carter Hart is the man. And they still got Brian Elliott available for backup duties. And it's been really awesome to have Gritty at the games. You know, how awesome is it to have Gritty back in your life?
we missed him. We missed him. Like
throwing his giant hat on the ice. Yeah, it me.
that should just be them.
Yeah, I mean, in this season, he won't be able to punch children. He won't be able to punch any kids in the stands.
Oh no! what a loss.
And so, Kevin Hayes will be happy that he won't be detained this season at all. Yeah, unless he goes on a road trip, I guess, with the team, and there's a...
He's going to have to take to punching the rookies in the back.
Yeah. The closest thing to kids that are around. And it's been kind of screwing my fantasy team because I drafted so many stars because I'm just a, you know, a fan of them, I guess. Their games are all postponed because of that COVID thing that I referenced earlier. Looks like they're reset to start on Friday, the 22nd, I think. So I guess they're going to have to squeeze those original games into the calendar somehow. I'm not sure if they're going to tack them on to the end or if there was any spare time that they had or matched up with the other teams that they had to play, but looks like they're back in action, and I'm eager to see what they look like. Apparently, Jamie Benn has been playing with Gurionov and Hintz, and they've been just dominating the inter-squad games. And
that
so
line would be...
We'll see what they look like when they get back.
That line is going to be an absolute wrecking force to have Benn and Hintz. They're both kind of, you know, Benn's super physical. Hintz is like a spark-pluggy, physical, you know, offensive-y type guy. Gurionov's going to go score. That could be a really good line.
Yeah, I'm happy as a fantasy owner of all three of those guys on various different teams. I really want them to get started, and I'm sure they want it. They're chomping at the bit to get going, and it also kind of helps them out a little bit, silver lining, so to speak, where if they have games added onto the end of their schedule, that Benn Bishop will be back for those games, and so he's out right now with an injury, but you know, he's set to be back, I think, end of March. And okay, so if they're adding games on, you know, he'll be around. And so that's good news for them. Although it does suck to miss the start of the season and to be, you know, kind of a week and a half behind everybody else. Also, they'll be at the bottom of the standings forever.
I was about to just make a joke about the Stars being the worst team in the league, but... I mean, they also still are competing with Chicago, Columbus, and Buffalo, who also have 0 points.
Yeah.
The difference in the team, so they're technically above them in the standings, so they have less losses.
Wow. Oh, man. Well, it could be a sneaky, you know, meteoric rise to the top at the very end of the season because of the...
They're going to have the St. Louis Cinderella story.
So is... Is Valentine's Day going to be the new American Thanksgiving?
Yeah, that's about the right time frame, I think.
Or is it going to be a little bit later?
About a month. No, Valentine's Day is right on track, actually. But just over a month, just under a month. And with a shortened season, that'll be about the right time frame for being able to tell who's going to be in the playoff. That's pretty good. That's going to be the time. Yeah.
That's our new target date, and we'll check in then.
So looking over to the Columbus Blue Jackets, recent, you know, it started, rumors started flowing around the end of the offseason that Pierre-Luc Dubois was requesting a trade out of Columbus, and it kind of got shoveled to the side as he immediately signed a contract extension. Everyone thought everything was okay. However, since that happened, it's now been publicized by, you know, none other than John Tortorella that Dubois does want out of Columbus, that he has officially requested a trade. And it's kind of interesting, maybe not surprising, considering what's happened in Columbus with star players over recent years, that yet another one wants out of Columbus. So kind of sucks for them because it seems like he's right on the verge of, you know, kind of turning the corner into being like a legitimate number one center. But looking at today's usage anyways in a game against the Detroit Red Wings, Pierre-Luc Dubois only got 15 minutes of ice time. He was like the sixth or seventh most of a forward. There were, you know, two lines of forwards that got more ice time than him. Tortorella said, no, he did not bench Pierre-Luc Dubois, but the ice time and usage would kind of suggest that there was a stretch where he was benched. I was wondering what your thoughts on that situation were.
I mean, my initial take on that is maybe they're just reducing his ice time so he doesn't get hurt.
That's a common
one.
So
that they can trade him. But yeah, I mean, he's had a slow start to the season too. So, He just got his first goal tonight, and I think that's his first point for the year. I think before that he was just like minus two. That's it. I know this because he's on my fantasy team. You know, you compare him to someone like Patrick Laine, who also is rumored to have requested a trade, or his agent has said that. Anyway, it would be mutually beneficial if Laine moved on from the Jets. And Laine's really been tearing it up in his time, and he's hurt now. You know, maybe Columbus saw that and said, you know what? Maybe we want to keep him healthy so that we can trade him out of town. The rumor is that, you know, Montreal is kind of in on him. And, oh, my God, if they get Pierre-Luc Dubois, Montreal is going to be perhaps bumping Toronto off of my list for number one in the North if that trade, depending on who goes back.
Yeah, I was just going to say, because the rumors, I would not do that trade if I were Montreal because they're wanting, like, Suzuki and Mete. I would not give up Suzuki right now.
I think Suzuki is like probably the only untouchable person on that team, and Price. I mean, maybe Josh Anderson. I think he could look really good on Columbus.
Yeah, that could be a good fit. He might be a Tortorella type player.
Yeah, I saw that Suzuki news. I don't think that Montreal would ever bite on that, but Kotkaniemi?
I think they could on that.
Maybe.
I wouldn't be as opposed to
Kotkaniemi plus. Yeah, I think like Kotkaniemi with like Texier and Bemstrom or something. That would be pretty sick. I don't know. It depends on what they'd have to give up, but I think Montreal with Pierre-Luc Dubois in their top six would be pretty good.
Yeah, because
who's their first two centers right now? Dano and Suzuki?
Yeah. I mean, is Suzuki playing center? I know he is one, but is he wing or center?
I'm not sure. But yeah, there's no way that they trade Suzuki. And then with Juulsen getting claimed, I don't know if they want to get rid of a defenseman prospect too. Like, I don't think they really want to get rid of someone like Mete.
They probably don't, but at the same time, looking at their defense,
I don't know.
You know, someone like Mete is probably expendable, especially because of Alexander Romanov, who's kind of come into the lineup, and he's immediately had a huge impact playing. Yeah, I think he got some time with Shea Weber, but I think he's slotted in on the third pairing. But other than that, they have, you know, Weber, Petrie, Edmondson, Kulak, Chiarot already. So I feel like someone like Mete would be the expendable one of that bunch right now.
Yeah, and they just have to pray that nobody gets hurt in their top 6D. Unless they send back somebody like a 7th, 8th guy. I don't know. But, has there been any other teams that have been rumoredly interested?
Montreal was the only one that I had seen serious consideration for. I think a lot of teams are obviously going to call for him, but not many would be able to fit his contract in right now or be willing to be able to part with what it would take to get him. Because like that, trading for Pierre-Luc Dubois might be one of those trades where it's hard to get a package that is worth it on either side. Because like one team's going to have to give up a lot of good pieces, prospects, draft picks to get Pierre-Luc Dubois, to get a single player. And the other team's giving up what could be a first-line center if he was utilized as one in Pierre-Luc Dubois for a bunch of pieces that may or may not pan out. So the ones that the package just doesn't work out very well for either side, but one team's going to have to give up a lot for a player like him.
Yeah, it kind of seems like that Matt Duchene. Yeah, it kind of seems like that Matt Duchene type trade where they might wait and wait and wait for the right type of deal. But if he wants out, I mean, I don't know. We'll see. But yeah, I think it's going to be hard to get fair value for him because he didn't say publicly he wanted out. And so you can't put that on him if, you know, they don't have a whole lot of bargaining power in this trade because the team in Tortorella let it be known that yes, he did officially request a trade. So, yeah. I don't know. Yeah, like you said, there's probably not a whole lot of teams that could fit him in unless they moved somebody. Maybe the Devils.
No, maybe.
Maybe the Devils get him.
You're looking at their lineup, they could really use a
their retool.
First line forward.
Yeah, just in general, just a first line forward, yeah.
Don't care who, just somebody.
Yeah, we'll see where he ends up. If anywhere.
Yeah, because, I mean, the Jackets are not in any rush to trade him. This isn't, like, an immediate thing. Like, he's going to play out the contract. He signed the contract for 2 years for a reason. He's going to stay there and get, you know, get his ice time in and play as a Blue Jacket until something pops up, and it's going to be something that the organization deems worthwhile. So, like you said, Matt Duchene situation, where it was known Duchene wanted out for a long time before Joe Sakic finally got a package that sufficed and in return, and pulled the trigger a very long time after rumors and speculation around the player started.
I got one more thing on my list here, and it's something that I kind of want your opinion on, because you're an Oilers fan, and it's on the Oilers goaltending situation. So Mike Smith was put on long-term IR, and that left the Oilers with basically nobody readily available to be backup. Am I correct in saying that? Because somebody was in Europe,
so,
and somebody had just
been left with
and claimed.
Mikko Koskinen is their starter. Their third string goalie, who is now the backup center, was there. Like, he was with the team and everything on the bench, but he's not ready for an NHL game. He's got very unimpressive numbers in the AHL, and they didn't have an available third string goalie after Anton Forsberg got on waivers. So they had Olivier Rodrigue, who was loaned out to Austria and had to travel to the country, so he's obviously in quarantine and not with the team. And I believe it was Troy Grosnick was claimed off of waivers from, was it LA? Yeah, either way, Troy Grosnick was claimed off of waivers, and he's kind of in the process of joining the team, if he's even going to, because Aaron Dell just got claimed by the Devils, so the Devils are gonna have to put someone on waivers, and then, you know, someone, you know, Toronto or Winnipeg's probably gonna claim whoever the Devils put on waivers, and then Forsberg's gonna go back on waivers, so it's like a whole thing. But to answer your original question, yes, the Oilers have no real backup goalie.
Yeah, so hopefully they don't push Koskinen to the edge here with that much usage. But yeah, that was a low-key, really smart move by the Devils to pick up Dell, I think. You know, take advantage of Toronto having to waive one of their guys. And, you know, Dell, I know he's someone that you were positive on joining the Leafs, and, you know, looks like Campbell secured that spot, I guess. And, you know, he's too good of a goalie to make it through waivers, even with, you know, everyone bouncing around right now. And so when Corey Crawford retired, you know, they really needed somebody. And so, yeah, smart move for them.
It does, however, break the Devils' goalie tandem of Blackwood and Wedgwood, which I find disappointing.
Yeah, the Forest.
The Forest, along with forward Miles Wood.
Yeah, just the Carpenter team.
Chop Wood.
Yeah, they're really a lot of blue-collar guys, hey? They've got Miles Wood, they've got Will Butcher, they've got Blackwood, Wedgwood, just a hard Nolan Foote, I guess, on the taxi squad too. So, just hardworking, you know, good Ontario boys, by the sounds of it, anyway. And then just a shit ton of, you know, Jespers on forward. Jespers, Yegor, and Jaegers. That's basically the Devils.
It's like the number one and two criteria for joining the Devils is, what is your first name, and do you have like a profession in your name?
Exactly.
So on that note, we're going to wrap things up for this time here on ClapperCast. Make sure you rate, review, and subscribe to our show on any podcast platform, and spread around the good word of ClapperCast. To keep up to date with the latest content, you can follow us on Instagram and Facebook at ClapperCast Media, or on Twitter at ClapperCast. Thanks for listening, and we will be back next time with more Hockey Talk.